The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we are tackling mitral valve prolapse with guest expert Dr. Fadi Matar from the Florida Cardiovascular Institute. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families. And with me is Dr. Matar. Welcome.
Thank you.
Dr. Matar has been in general and interventional cardiology practice for 15 years in Tampa, Florida. He completed his general and interventional cardiology at the Washington Hospital Center, George Washington University in 1994. He is currently a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of South Florida and the director of the cardiac care unit at Tampa General Hospital. He has authored multiple peer-reviewed articles on the subject of cardiology and interventional cardiology. He is actively involved in clinical research relating to coronary artery disease, new stent designs, and percutaneous valve replacement, as well as baroreflex modulation for treatment of systemic hypertension. And we may have time, we may not, on this show, but perhaps future shows, to talk more about some of these other exciting areas. So Fadi, again, welcome. It's great to have you here. And I guess we'll start off talking about mitral valve prolapse. However, I want to encourage everyone out there listening, if you have a question on any cardiac valve, please call. And that number is 289-1860, 289-1860. And for those outside of Hillsborough County, it's 877-969-8600, 877-969-8600 for those streaming live and are out of the county. So any question on any cardiac valve disease? Okay, well, Fadi, let's start with the basics for our listeners. The heart, how many valves? It has four valves. Can you trace blood through the heart as it comes back from the body?
The blood comes back from the body with less oxygen and to the right atrium, which is the top chamber, one of the top chambers of the heart. and flows to the right ventricle, which is the secondary chamber, pumping chamber of the heart, and the valve that allows that to happen is called the tricuspid valve.
Okay.
Then blood gets pumped from the right ventricle into the pulmonary artery on its way to the lungs to get the oxygen, and that valve that controls this flow is called the pulmonic valve. After the blood gets oxygenated in the lungs, it has to return back to the left side of the heart, which is called the left atrium, which is the second top chamber of the heart. From there on, it goes to the main pumping chamber of the heart called the left ventricle, and the valve that controls this unidirectional flow is called mitral valve. Then the left ventricle pumps the blood back out to the body through the aortic valve. Therefore, we have those four valves that allow blood flow into one direction from the right atrium all the way through the aorta in sequence.
Okay, and so for optimal functioning of the heart, there would be a complete, the valve would be able to have a complete closure with no backflow.
Correct.
And so in the case of prolapse, what does it mean to have prolapse of a valve?
Mitral valve prolapse is a condition that the person is born with, whereby the tissues that compose the mitral valve are a little bit abnormal, making the valve leaflets making them little redundant, meaning there's excess tissue of the mitral valve. The mitral valve is actually two leaflets, the anterior and the posterior. When the heart pumps, the left ventricle pumps, they close, and the tips of those two leaflets completely seal the blood, seal the orifice that prevents the blood from leaking from the left ventricle to the left atrium. When you have too much tissue, excess tissue, because of the abnormality of that valve, then it sort of prolapses, like buckles backwards. Sometimes, if that's severe, the seal is incomplete, and then you end up with a leak.
Okay. So normally the blood would be pushed or squeezed out of the left ventricle through the aorta to be distributed throughout the body. But in a case where there's mitral valve prolapse, you have a backflow back into the atrium, the above chamber, rather than out through the aorta and through the rest of the body. And so this is interesting in that you mentioned that this is a congenital problem, that the mitral valve the mitral valve prolapse is congenital. That is, the tissues, there's some overlap then, so it doesn't fit. Each leaflet doesn't fit properly to each other like a jigsaw puzzle would. There's overlap and redundancy, and this is the classic case, I imagine.
Yes.
And so, now, at what point does mitral valve prolapse become important for the patient?
Yes. There are two problems with the mitral valve prolapse. The first one is the fact that the mitral leaflet is abnormal, and there is sort of excess trauma on the valve with every heartbeat. When that happens, it can predispose the valve to get infected easily. So this is called endocarditis. For example, if the patient undergoes a procedure like a dental procedure or surgical procedure that involves the skin in where bacteria can get access to the bloodstream, if you have a faulty valve with lots of trauma to its tip, this bacteria can find itself a home, and it can cause infection. So that's problem number one.
And on that point, because I've heard different things over the years, some people saying that prolapse does not need antibiotics, prophylactic to the dentist, and then the thinking sometimes goes back and forth on these issues. The present thinking in your community, the cardiology community, is if you have mitral valve prolapse, then you do need to have a prophylactic antibiotic when you go to the dentist for cleaning?
Well, let me backtrack a little bit. Not all mitral valve prolapse are equal, created equal.
Okay.
There is, let me start again from scratch here saying, mitral valve prolapse is a very common diagnosis. If somebody gets the diagnosis of prolapse, it does not necessarily mean that they do have it. because there are different grades. Mm-hmm. So a mitral valve prolapse first, for it to be really diagnosed, you have to go by a really rigid criteria. Otherwise, many times I see a patient who carries the diagnosis of prolapse, but actually they do not have it.
And typically a diagnosis may be first suggested by a murmur on examination?
Correct.
With a stethoscope?
Not necessarily a murmur. Sometimes you hear like a click, which is when the valve buckles and tenses up, and with or without murmur, because prolapse may not have a leak.
Okay.
So you may not hear a murmur.
So prolapse, technically speaking, is like a bulging into the aorta, into the atrium,
correct,
without necessarily allowing the blood to flow through, backflow through it.
Correct. Okay. So the diagnosis usually gets made by the echo.
Okay.
When you do an ultrasound of the heart, then the cardiologist looks at the valve, and if it's a little bit, if it appears to be bowing a little bit more, so you might carry the you might get given the diagnosis of prolapse, but actually prolapse the diagnosis should be following rigid criteria, and I'm not going to go through that. But even that, let's say there is some prolapse, if the leaflets are not too thick and the prolapse is mild, you probably don't need antibiotic prophylaxis. We're talking about the full-blown prolapse where you have very redundant leaflets. They are very obviously thickened, and the prolapse is significant. And these ones, probably I would still treat prophylaxis.
So who can make that determination? A cardiologist? Or in other words, you have to have an echocardiogram to be able to determine whether or not you really should have a prophylactic antibiotic.
Correct. The echocardiogram done by a cardiologist who follows the
guidelines.
The guidelines of how to diagnose prolapse would be your choice.
Should everybody with suspected mitral valve prolapse have an echocardiogram?
Yes.
Okay.
You have to make that diagnosis, make sure it's not getting worse over time.
And one last question before our quick break. Do these patients with mitral valve prolapse, or do any patients with mitral valve prolapse need anticoagulation at any time?
Anticoagulation, no. You don't, not
so
just
no,
because of that.
There's no risk of clots forming on the leaflet?
Correct.
Okay.
No, not for that.
All right. We'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling mitral valve prolapse or any other cardiac valve that you'd like to know more about. Be right back.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
Profile America, Sunday, September 13th. This is National Grandparents Day, a time to say thanks for the love and help they provide and to recognize their growing importance to the survival of many American families. The special day was the idea of Marion McQuaid of Fayette County, West Virginia, and has been observed nationally since 1979. Today, grandparents are increasingly not just relatives to be visited on holidays and weekends, but part of the year-round household for many children. More than 6.5 million grandparents have their grandchildren living with them, and 4 out of 10 are responsible for the youngsters' basic care. 1 out of 3 preschoolers whose mothers work are cared for during business hours by a grandparent. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with a doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, we're back with Fadi Matar. Dr. Matar is with me. He's an interventional cardiologist with the Florida Cardiovascular Institute and the director of the Cardiac Care Unit at Tampa General Hospital. And we are tackling mitral valve prolapse today on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. On the line is Mary. Mary, are you with us?
I am.
Okay, well, it's nice to have you here. Thanks for spending a little bit of your Sunday with us on the Focus on Females Radio Clinic. And tell us about your heart disease.
4 years ago, I had to go in for open heart surgery. I had a triple bypass, and I had a leaking valve, so they repaired it. And I didn't know I had that before I went to surgery.
Okay, let's back up a little bit. How old are you now, Mary?
I'm 63.
Okay, and what kind of symptoms were you having before? Before you found out you needed to have surgery, the coronary artery bypass graft surgery?
I had chest pain, shortness of breath.
Okay. And, all right, so you went to your, you were sent to a cardiologist. By the way, you are a patient of Dr. Matar's?
I am.
Okay. So at that point when you had shortness of pain and, shortness of breath and chest pain, then you were evaluated. And could you give us a little description of how much time between your evaluation and the decision was made that you needed to have the surgery?
It was almost immediately they found out that I'd had a heart attack.
Silent heart attack? Are you diabetic?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I had a heart attack. I went to my primary care doctor, and he did the test there and found I'd had a heart attack, sent me to the hospital. They went in and looked around to see if they could put a stent, and they could not. I was too blocked. So they had me rest for about 3 days and got my surgery scheduled in August of 4 years ago.
Okay. So, all right, so Fadi, the previous heart attack was recognized with EKG?
Yes.
She was not my patient at that time. I took care of her since the operation, but she did not have, EKG and cardiac enzymes usually is how you diagnose the heart attack.
Was it felt that she had had recently had that heart attack or rather than remotely? In other words, is it felt to be the active process at the time?
Yeah, from my recollection about Mary, what she told me when I first met her about a year ago, Mary, and then I started to see her maybe 2 years.
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Maybe three now.
Yeah, it was a heart attack at the time.
You still had elevated enzymes.
Right.
Okay. All right, so then you had you had the operation. How many vessels were bypassed, Mary?
Three.
All right, and tell us, and maybe Dr. Matar can also share with us how when was it discovered that you had a mitral valve prolapse?
It was discovered while I was in surgery for the bypass.
Okay. And so how, Fadi, why don't you go ahead and take us through this?
Yeah, typically a patient presenting with a heart attack, they always get an echocardiogram. And, of course, in addition to the physical exam that most of the time should reveal heart murmur, with the echo and the physical exam, you will diagnose any other associated cardiac abnormalities. And so before any operations on the heart get done, you have to have an ultrasound. Make sure you're not having any other problems. And this is how that was discovered. So she apparently had a significant mitral valve prolapse with a leak. And the combination of that and the fact that she needed cardiac surgery necessitated a dual procedure, which is the bypass and mitral valve repair.
Okay, so before you went in the operating room, the pre-surgery evaluation included the echocardiogram, and so your doctors knew what they were dealing with before you were brought to the operating room. That is, it was already planned how many vessels need to be grafted, and the fact that this mitral valve prolapse was significant had to be attended to as well.
Correct.
And so tell us, Dr. Matar, again, how that's done in the operating room, how you coordinate with the bypass surgeon?
Well, the coronary angiogram has to be done prior to surgery, which is how you diagnose coronary disease. During that coronary angiogram, the cardiologist injects the coronary arteries with contrast with catheters that shows the detailed anatomy of those blockages. At the same time, also, we put the catheter inside the left ventricle. It's called a pigtail catheter, and inject contrast in the left ventricle, and you do an angiogram, and you can see if the valve is leaking or not. So you have another procedure confirming that there is mitral valve prolapse with leak.
And how much leak you have.
And how much leak you have. And we have different grades of how we grade them from 1+ to 4+. So when you have that, the cardiac surgeon looks at the angiogram, looks at the echocardiogram, and plans the surgery. So when the patient is on the table, the heart gets stopped using the heart-lung machine,
right,
because you have to have an immobile heart, and the bypasses get placed using veins from the legs, as well as most of the time you use a mammary artery to bypass the blockages. And then the mitral valve gets repaired. There are two kinds of surgical treatment for mitral valve regurgitation, which is the leak. One is called replacement. The other called is repair. The preferable treatment option is repair, because you would prefer not to put a mechanical valve if you can help it. Mitral valve prolapse patients are usually treated by repair,
okay,
where pieces of the redundant tissue get excised, and then the tethering mechanism of the valve that attaches the leaflets to the left ventricle, which are most of the time also involved with this disease process, and they are elongated, they get shortened. So this called the repair involves shortening of the chordae,
mm-hmm, which is the tether.
The tethers. Mm-hmm. The surgeon shortens those tethers, and they also cut pieces of the valve that are extra, so mm-hmm, to reduce the excessive tissue. And then the third thing that this surgeon does, they put a ring around the mitral valve annulus, okay, to
which is the base of the valve.
The base of the valve, where the valve attaches to the junction between the left atrium and the left ventricle. So that annulus is called an annular ring or annuloplasty ring, basically reduces the orifice of the mitral valve.
And we'll be back with more of this process of the surgery on Mary in a moment on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. We're talking about a mitral valve prolapse. We'll be right back.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. Is a government-run health option still alive? Presidential Advisor David Axelrod tells CBS it is and continues to be President Obama's preference for Americans who cannot afford health insurance. But Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill tells Fox there's been too much focus on that specific issue and it's becoming a distraction. An Afghan army spokesman says 500 Taliban militants were killed in a 6 to 8 hour firefight, the battle triggered by an ambush that killed 3 U.S. servicemen and 7 Afghan troops. The Pentagon says a civilian contractor has been shot and killed on a U.S. military base in the Iraqi city of Tikrit. A soldier has been detained in the incident, and an investigation is underway. And the NFL season officially began Thursday night, but it's really getting rolling today. Even as we speak, a number of teams have new quarterbacks lining up behind center. More details at srnnews.com.
Since joining Facebook, you friended the one who broke your heart in college, only to discover the pain is still there. Become a virtual mob hitman and been showered with beef stew in a virtual food fight. Why not try something a tad more useful? The Talk Radio 860 WGUL fan page. Real-time news updates and a place to connect with Bennett, Gallagher, Prager, Medved, and Hewitt. The WGUL fan page on Facebook. No beef stew, just intelligent talk.
Night sweats, hot flashes. Does that sound familiar? I'm Judy Singer. I've been in the natural health field over 25 years, and now I'm in menopause, so my product has to be all natural, and it has to really work. My special formula, Hot Flash Comfort Cream, is an odorless natural cream absorbed quickly through your skin. And no more hot flashes, just comfort. Call 866-711-JUDY, 866-711-5839, or hotflashcomfortcream.com.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2009 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com, and if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We are tackling mitral valve prolapse with Dr. Fadi Matar from Florida Cardiovascular Institute. For anyone with questions about mitral valve prolapse or any other heart valve issue or question, we encourage you to call 289-1860, 289-1860 here in Hillsborough County. Elsewhere, 877-969-8600. On the line is Mary, and Mary is a very young 63-year-old woman who was found, who was a patient of Dr. Matar's and found to have had coronary artery disease as well as mitral valve prolapse. The mitral valve prolapse was found as she was being evaluated for surgery to repair her coronary artery disease. And we have had the pleasure of listening to an expert, Dr. Matar, describe the nuances and the process of the evaluation, discovering the mitral valve disease, the preoperative evaluation, and the process of restoring health to Mary. So, Dr. Matar, resume this as you were describing the treatment for the mitral valve prolapse preferably a reparative surgery.
Yes, there are two types, either repair or replacement. We prefer repair if we can help it. Unfortunately, not all valves are reparable. And the reason for that is you would like to preserve the infrastructure of the left ventricle that includes the mitral valve apparatus, which is the cordae tendinae, these are the tethers, little tiny cords that connect the tips of the mitral valve to the left ventricle. And the root of those, like tree branches, and the base of those cordae are called the pap muscle. There are two papillary muscles, which are the roots that connect the ventricle to the cordae.
Okay, and you also mentioned about the ring, the annulus around the base of the valve. Did Mary have the repair surgery?
Yes, she did.
Okay, So she had the coronary arteries were first repaired or bypassed, and then the mitral valve was replaced.
Repaired.
Excuse me. Thank you. It was repaired. And this goes back 4 years ago. What do you recollect, Mary, coming out of that surgery?
I do.
And tell us about a month, 6 or 2 months afterward. What kind of change did you appreciate?
Before I was able to return to work, but part of that it was probably my fault because I did not go to the exercise classes that were offered. I'm kind of lazy when it comes to that. I should have gone. I look back now and wish I had. So it took me a little over 3 months before I could go back to work part-time.
Okay. And during, Fadi, on the post-operatively, do these patients require any special medications, antibiotics, I imagine, for a while? Do they require anticoagulants during the post-operative period?
Anticoagulation, initially after you repair, not to replace, after you prepare mitral valve, you may want to keep the patient on about 6 weeks' course of Coumadin. The reason for that is that annulus, if the annuloplasty ring, which is it's not normal tissue, can be a nidus for thrombus clots until the heart muscle heals around it. So for about a few weeks, you would potentially keep them on blood thinners. But after that, there is no need for chronic anticoagulation.
Okay, great. And so the cardiologist monitors blood pressure, I imagine, after that. Do you do EKGs afterward? And if so, how frequently?
Yeah. The usual care of the post-operative patient is an outpatient visit to the cardiologist about 2 weeks and to the cardiac surgeon around that same time. At that first post-operative visit, the cardiologist would have to do an EKG to make sure the patient remains in a normal rhythm, because in about 30-40% of the times, the patient develops atrial fibrillation, which is an abnormal rhythm involving the top chambers of the heart that can lead to strokes and clot formation. And that's treatable. So you do an EKG and make sure that the patient is in normal sinus rhythm. You look at the patient's wounds, make sure there's no infection, cellulitis, and you remove the staples that have been placed on his skin to make sure that they don't get infected.
And again, it's the same wound. The surgeon has access, obviously, to the valve as well as the coronary arteries to the same chest
right.
wound.
Right, the sternal wound. But also there, if you have the chest tubes that come out of the skin, like two little wounds, stab wounds that the surgeon have to suture. And then if the patient had bypass surgery, the leg veins, the thigh or the leg, they have wounds where the veins were harvested. Mm-hmm. So there will be sutures there that you have to take out and make sure they're not infected.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And the patients are encouraged, as we've heard from Mary, to begin a gradually increased exercise program and watch salt intake?
Yes. The exercise program should start about 6 weeks after surgery. Why? Because you want to allow the sternum to heal before you start upper extremity exercises. If you're too early to doing that, you can break the wires that are holding the sternum together.
Okay. All right. And, okay, so I want to do get back to the mitral valve prolapse. So, Mary, your shortness of breath had improved and your chest pain has improved. Any residual symptoms over these last 4 years?
I do pretty good. Dr. Matar has me on some medication to make sure my cholesterol stays intact where it should be. He also has me on some other medication, and actually I do most of the time I feel pretty good.
Tell me, do you have children?
I do.
And has mitral valve prolapse been diagnosed in your family?
Not that I'm aware of. Of course, you just don't go to a cardiologist, it seems like, until you have a problem. And that's when that's not good, although my children are aware that we are, but most, all my children are under 30.
And Fadi, is there a genetic component to this?
There is, although the penetrance is not 100%, meaning it's a variable penetrance, we call it. If a family member has MVP or prolapse, doesn't mean necessarily that everybody else is going to have it.
So what it gives the family, Mary's family, is the knowledge that there was a positive family history for mitral valve prolapse. So if someone were to develop symptoms, shortness of breath, and maybe there are other symptoms you'd like to share with listeners where they should then think about getting an evaluation.
Yeah. It's always a good idea if you have a family member diagnosed with mitral valve prolapse, the least you can do is be checked for a heart murmur and a mitral valve click by at least an internal medicine physician.
So you recommend, even if there's no symptoms,
correct,
if your parent, for example, has mitral valve prolapse, you should at least have go and be evaluated by
At least an internist,
looking for signs on examination with a stethoscope of a click or a murmur.
Correct.
Compatible with
yes.
that. Okay. And that goes for male relative as well as female relatives.
Yes. Mitral valve prolapse is, if you look at the broad diagnosis of it, it's more commonly diagnosed in females than males. But the complicated mitral valve prolapse is more common in the males than the females.
And do we have any explanation for that?
I think no, but my feeling is that the reason why more females have that diagnosis is that, and the diagnosis is with the mild form, is we as a cardiology community are very liberal in diagnosing mitral valve prolapse, even though it's not really there, and that is more common in females. For some reason, because the females' hearts are smaller than the males' hearts, and if you don't do the echocardiogram, if you make the diagnosis in one view, echocardiographic view, you tend to see it more in females in those small hearts, okay. And you can overdiagnose that.
Okay, all right, that's very interesting. All right, and are there any other symptoms that MVP or mitral valve prolapse can cause besides shortness of breath that people should
yes.
be aware of?
Chest pains, palpitations. These are the most common.
Okay.
Some other symptoms could be fatigue. These are vague, and we don't know exactly why such symptoms occur, but these are the main ones.
Excellent. Mary, you have any questions for the doctor while he's here and while you're on the phone?
On Friday, and he always answers all my questions, so I'm in good shape.
Great. Mary, once again, thank you for sharing your day with us today. Have a great day.
Take care, Mary.
And thank you for calling.
You bet. On the line is Gerd from St. Pete. Gerd, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling valve disease, mitral valve prolapse, and other heart valve diseases. What is your question?
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question on the poisonous effect of omega-3 fish oil, the low-quality fish oil that a few drops dissolve styrofoam, and it is claimed to contain free radicals. And I'm wondering if it has any effect on the heart if it is consumed.
Okay. Any omega-3 fatty acids? I remember reading something about possible association with arrhythmia, ectopic beats, and maybe hemorrhage. I don't know. Is this what's your feel on this stuff?
I don't have. Unfortunately, I don't know much about the bad kinds of omega-3 fatty acid, but
a lot of people taking it these days.
Yeah. I am myself a little skeptical about their beneficial effects to begin with, and because in the literature and peer-reviewed journals of cardiology journals, the data is very, very vague and conflicting, and there is no solid proof that they definitely improve and the outcomes in patients with coronary disease.
Are you convinced there's any quality studies showing any downside at this time, at least, to taking omega-3 fatty acids?
No, there is none. As far as I know, based on the literature, there are no studies that show it's harmful. But at the same time, there are no solid number of studies that show that it's beneficial.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of this stuff is anecdotal, it seems. In the eye literature, too, there's a lot of anecdotal stuff. People take it, and sometimes it helps dry eye in some cases, sometimes not. So maybe one of those things where in years to come we'll get more and more information, more quality studies, and get a better feel of what's good about it and what's not good about it. Gerd, would you like to add anything to that or ask a follow-up question?
Well, my simple concern is I put a couple drops on an overturned styrofoam cup, and within 10 minutes, it dissolved into a big hole.
Wow.
It's not good.
And that was the patient's concern, that it contained some kind of chemical that may be poisonous. Dr. Lang, eye doctor on the radio show, langeyecare.com, he claimed it contains free radicals if it dissolves styrofoam.
Well, I'll tell you what you may want to do is, I mean, if you, you know, got some or bought some omega-3 fatty acids from a store, you may want to let the public health folks know about that. Hillsborough County Public Health Department know about something like that, because that certainly should be followed up and looked into if that indeed is what happened. And I'm sure they'd be very interested in hearing about this. But that's, I think, the first thing I would do.
They would concern such a question?
Oh, I would think so. If people are selling something that has, you know, such potential for creating problems, and that certainly sounds like it could create a problem.
Yeah, there's a difference in opinion from doctors. This is Dr. Lang, and then the doctor whose product is being sold, who's trying to convince me that it is harmless. And here the patient doesn't know whether it's harmful or harmless, and the doctors disagree.
Yeah, I would go ahead and let the public health department know about what you've seen, and let them take care of this issue.
Thank you very much for your answers.
Thank you, Gerd. Okay, and let's see. Back to mitral valve prolapse. What is the prognosis of mitral valve prolapse?
Mitral valve prolapse prognosis overall is good. Whether it's repaired or not. But the mitral valve prolapse, there are different kinds or different severities. The mild mitral valve prolapse may never need any surgical treatment. Severe mitral valve prolapse, especially if it's regurgitant, meaning there is a leak, this is the one that, if not well attended to and treated appropriately, can lead to bad outcomes. But if it's treated, should be a good prognosis.
And we'll come back with more on that and what's the incidence of evolution from mild to severe when we return on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. We're waiting for your calls and your questions. Be right back.
The Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
When's the last time you witnessed a miracle?
I'm Joy Sutton. I've been a foster parent for 9 years. When I think of miracles, I think of Michael. He came to me at 3 days old, addicted to crack cocaine and numerous other drugs. Today, he is happy, healthy, right on target for where he should be for any other little four-year-old boy.
When's the last time you were the miracle?
So many people, when they hear that I'm a foster parent, say, how do you do it? Anyone can be a foster parent if you're willing to open your home and your heart to children.
Hillsborough Kids Incorporated can help you make a miracle come true.
You always have someone there to help you answer any questions, to walk you along through every step of the way.
Be part of a miracle. Learn more about what it takes to become a foster parent. Contact Hillsborough Kids Incorporated today. Call 813-643-KIDS, 813-643-KIDS, or visit hillsboroughkids.org. This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsborough, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Once again, today with Dr. Fadi Matar, we are discussing mitral valve prolapse. We encourage everyone with a question on the mitral valve or any other heart valve to call in with your question. Our number is 289-1860, 289-1860. And elsewhere out of Hillsborough County, it's 877-969-8600. And before the break, we were talking about the prognosis of mitral valve prolapse. And as you mentioned, Fadi, the mitral valve prolapse is a congenital disease. Prolapse meaning, of course, that the leaflets of the mitral valve bulge, but not necessarily allow blood to leak through it. So in the case of mitral valve prolapse with no leak, what's the chances of that going on to a leak? Regurgitation.
Yeah, it has to do that prognosis, or it has to do with the fact, with whether or not the mitral leaflet thickening is severe or mild or moderate. So the thicker the mitral leaflets are, the more extensive this redundancy and the prolapse, the higher the chance of progression into significant leak.
How frequently should a patient with known mitral valve prolapse be followed? How frequently should they be followed by their cardiologist?
For mild mitral valve prolapse, asymptomatic, probably every 2 to 3 years, an echo.
Mm-hmm.
For moderate to severe mitral valve prolapse, probably once a year, an echo should be done, especially if there's a regurgitation or a leak present.
Okay. Now, let's take the case where there is a leak present, regurgitation present. Does that necessarily mean that that leak will progress with time?
Does not have to. The leak may stay stationary, doesn't change, and you're fine. But regurgitation or leakage can become worse with age because, as you know, the heart beats several times a minute, 24/7 for the, and then each heartbeat will cause some trauma to the mitral valve. So if you can calculate how many times this valve opens and closes, and if it's abnormal, with time, the leak can progress and injury gets worse.
I think it's amazing that there are cases where it doesn't progress.
Correct. I mean, the human body is an amazing body. I mean, you would wonder, why don't we get more sick? Why don't we get sicker more often than not?
Okay, so patients with known leakage through their mitral valve should be evaluated at least once a year. And if they develop symptoms, the shortness of breath, the fatigue, the chest pain palpitations that you mentioned earlier, then they certainly should be seen within a few days. I guess it depends upon the severity of the symptoms.
Right, depends on the severity. So the echocardiogram purpose is to see if there's worsening of the leak. But let's say the patient has severe leakage and mitral valve prolapse, but he or she is asymptomatic.
Okay.
And you probably have to do the echo at least every year, maybe every 6 months, for the purpose of seeing if the left ventricle is getting more dilated and if the heart function is getting worse, because that will decide if the surgery is required.
Okay.
So the presence of a severe leak does not automatically mean you need surgery now.
But what it does do is it alerts the cardiologist that they need to start looking at that left ventricle to see, to identify any morbidity, any weakness starting to develop of that left ventricle, because ultimately that ventricle will become weaker with
Correct.
Time.
Correct. Because if the ventricle becomes weak, this is too late to fix it.
All right. So you want to identify it. Really, you may see this and diagnose this even before the patient develops symptoms.
Correct. And in the old days when we did not perfect the mitral valve repair procedure, we sort of had to wait until the patient's symptoms develop or the ventricle started failing. Now, with the advent of repair, which is a better operation than the valve replacement, we are more willing to operate even if the patient does not have symptoms, as long as the leak is severe and the ventricle maybe starts dilating. And some even if it's not dilating, if the leak is severe and the patient is asymptomatic, with repair, if you can repair it, and with a good center that has high frequency of good repairs, you may want to go even if the patient is asymptomatic.
Excellent. Well, I'd like to thank my good friend, Dr. Fadi Mattar, for joining us today on mitral valve prolapse. Next week on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, we're tackling rheumatoid arthritis. That's rheumatoid arthritis with Dr. Joel Silverfield. Until then, have a great week, and we'll see you next week on Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.